orden de directores, orden de servicios de ofa, what mandates are the department executive, and how are they developing that mandate. So this is the brief for the day. So we'll start with the Department of Education and Training, and then later on to get a briefing from the Department of Science and Education. Welcome, Honorable Wong. We missed you yesterday. I do understand that some of our colleagues are sitting in two committees, or more than two committees, so to speak, more than one committee. So, for the Honorable Yao, you're welcome. You saw this yesterday. And of course, you send your apologies. Also, we want to find the book.
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, good morning. give a presentation on behalf of the University Education Branch. You will have noticed from my input yesterday that I was kind of biased towards highlighting the issues in this branch that they can be accepting the departments. So the University Education Branch has the function to assist in the development of
the
I think we have new faces here. Not only because I think like that, but I guess I don't know. I think they were sending my names to be presenting it yesterday. I don't know if you were here yesterday.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so the first part was just introduction. For those who are not paying attention, can you get a quick one?
Good morning, James and colleagues. My name is Lucien Kerr. I'm the acting CFO of the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Who else was not here yesterday?
Part of the function is to build capacity here for the university system. And this capacity development is focused on students, student development, student success, staff development, and program curriculum development. The chief director, teaching, learning, and research development, is responsible for this function. A second function within the branch is to manage planning in the higher education system, funding and expansion. So the whole issues around enrollment planning, around funding the higher education system, and around infrastructure development, both teaching and learning infrastructure and student housing, all within the chief directorate, which is titled University Planning and Institutional Funding. A third area of focus is institutional governance and management and sector liaison. Chief Director of Institutional Governance and Management Support is responsible for this function. And then a fourth function within the branch is the development and oversight and implementation of higher education policy. A whole range of policies in the higher education space. This Chief Director also has a function of supporting research to implementation of the research outputs policy. Chief Director in higher education policy development and research. So the university education branch essentially is broken up into four chief directors, each led by a chief director. Current strategic foci for the university education branch, important areas of work that we take forward currently and are uncapturing this further as we hope to. The whole issue of funding, student funding, development of policy around the new national bursary scheme, and expanding thinking around student funding to move beyond the bursary scheme to looking at policy around other students. Capacity development in universities that has a focus on quality, has a focus on success, and has a focus in focus on transforming the higher education system. The structuring of partnerships, both local and international, to support development of the higher education system. Effective oversight of funding that comes through treasury to the university system. That's the oversight of the funding policy for the department, including how earmark grants utilized. Implementation of macro infrastructure framework, so a move towards developing a framework for the entire university system, and to utilize that framework to guide infrastructure allocation and infrastructure delivery going forward, rather than an ad hoc approach, so kind of forward planning framework that allows us to attend to the issues. Key issue, and we did speak about this yesterday, DG has to highlight some of the challenges around infrastructure development at some of the universities. So a key issue that we take forward in the branch is the development of an infrastructure development support program. And a program that is going to be targeted towards supporting those institutions who do not have the capacity to implement the infrastructure programs. And where we're seeing delays, and where we're seeing abandoned buildings, and where we're seeing underutilization of funds, and so on. So it's going to put in place a national support structure to enable those issues to be addressed. Implementation of the HDI, Historically Disadvantaged University Program. Substantial funding has been allocated to this program through treasury allocation, essentially to support the HDIs, and to lift the HDIs from where they are in the differentiation of all the HDIs at different places, but to position the HDIs in strong institutions in the university landscape. We're developing a, what we're calling the Historic Business Advantage Institutions Development Program, through which these funds will be directed to specifically support the eight universities that have been identified as an HDI in the country. Central Applications Service is a key issue. Developing a system simultaneously affecting our system, postgraduates and undergraduates. colleagues will know that the higher education qualification subframework was gazetted 2013. And since then, there's been a process of universities to align their programs with the higher education qualification subframework. The critical date members should be aware of is 31st December 2019, when all university programs are expected to be aligned to the higher education qualifications framework, and the CHT, DAGT, and various other stakeholders are working strongly towards ensuring that that is the case. The critical challenge is if all the programs are not accredited and registered by the 31st of December 2019, then no new registrations can be taken in 2020. However, we are quite confident that processes are in place to deal with this, including enhanced capacity at the Council of Higher Education and enhanced capacity at SACWA to enable registrations to go through. A particular issue was the Bachelor of Technology, the BTEC, the one-year program that sits on top of three-year diplomas, which has to be phased out because it's not a HEQSF aligned program, and new qualifications being put in place to meet the function that that program admits. So the Universities of Technology had a particular issue to address, which was a phasing out of the BTEC and putting in place advanced diplomas to address the need of the BTEC. I've spoken about the macro infrastructure framework, a new innovation in the system, a framework which requires infrastructure development, and then complementary to that, the infrastructure support program to provide support to universities around infrastructure. university planning and institutional funding is another function of the Chief Directorate. It's responsible for the Student Housing Infrastructure Program, we call it the SHIP program, acronym. And there is a plan to build over the next 10 years, 2030, 200,000 new beds in the university education space, residences across the universities, and 100,000 TVETs beds in residences. Obviously, this requires a significant injection of funding, and so this funding being sourced through various sources. National Treasury is coming to the party, and including private-public partnerships, which we alluded to yesterday. The mandate has been given to the Department of Higher Education and Training to incorporate the nursing colleges and the agricultural colleges into higher education. And this process is underway, moving more rapidly for the nursing colleges. Some delays in terms of the agricultural colleges. Essentially, these will be structured as higher education colleges in the new higher education landscape. Institutional governance and management support. Chief Directorate has been responsible for driving the work around the National Plan for Post-School Education and Training, which we presented yesterday. So while it's a department-wide plan, this Chief Directorate led the work through acting as a secretariat for the work. I'm not going to focus on this slide because I think you had a lot of information on it yesterday. This Chief Directorate is also responsible for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, NSFAS. It has oversight on NSFAS and takes forward DAGT responsibilities with respect to NSFAS. So just some issues highlighting for NSFAS, which members do know about already, is that the scheme has been under administration since August 2016. There's significant progress being made with improving processes at NSFAS, although we're still encountering challenges, and these are being attended to on an ongoing basis. The administrator is probably going to be approved for second phase for one more year, so that the transition to a new governance structure for NSFAS can be managed in a rational way. And I've also indicated that the DAGT is working steadily towards a more comprehensive student funding scheme for students. active on the higher commission, and including through reflecting on what was learned through the Ikusasa student financial aid program that was piloted over the last few years. This CD is also responsible for institutional governance and management. We refer to the CD as a CD that is dealing with formal issues in the system, because you can see it is kind of the CD that must be responsive on a daily basis to the critical challenges that are coming through the system. So governance and management is one of them. Three universities need to be highlighted at present. The University of Fort Hare is under administration, and an independent assessment process underway. Our University of Technology, an independent assessment is underway as well, shortly to be concluded, expecting the report quite soon. But one outcome of that independent assessment already was a recommendation to put in place an administrator, which the Minister did approve, and we have an administrator now in place and shortly to be taking up. In fact, he's officially taken up his position, but shortly to be interacting with the university community. And in Tafaho Makato, University of Health Sciences, has had significant issues that have come to the fore over the last few weeks. They've just gone back to the teaching and learning program this week. I do see, though, that there are still challenges that are being experienced that we are having to address on a daily basis. And DG did highlight some of the issues in relation to SMU yesterday. The Higher Education Policy Development and Research Chief Directorate is the chief directorate which is responsible for supporting the development of higher education policies. So putting the process in place towards the development of policies and drawing the relevant expertise into these processes so that policies can be developed. So policies that are going to be finalized quite soon, they've gone through the range of processes, including public comment. It's a policy on African languages in higher education, and a policy on internationalization in higher education. Policies that are still in the development process, either right at the beginning phases or in a consultation process, is a differentiation policy for higher education, regulations on the institutional types. So those different institutional types we spoke about yesterday, universities, university colleges, higher education colleges. Policies that are already in place in the process of implementation is the creative and innovation outputs policy. So colleagues might not be aware of this policy, it's very new. Previously, the DHED supported research outputs in terms of postgraduate students' books, research articles, and there was a call from the system to go beyond that, to recognize other scholarly products out of the university system, like innovations and creative outputs, like, for example, music and art and drama, under specific criteria. A key issue in coming to the fore in the research outputs work is the issue of plagiarism, the issue of research quality, and the issue of predatory journals, which we are currently doing some research and information gathering work around with a view to looking at how policy can be strengthened to deal with these issues. The Chief Director is also responsible for the higher education contribution to the BRICS program, and leads the work around the BRICS Academic Forum, the Ministers of Education meeting, and the BRICS conference. Within the Chief Director, the Secretariat is located for the Transformation Oversight Committee, which is a committee led currently by Professor Andre Keat at Nelson Mandela University. A committee set up to advise the Minister, to advise the Minister on transformation in the higher education system. They have a role to monitor what's happening in terms of transformation, to advise on programs, to address transformation, and to update the Minister on transformation progress in the university system. The last two directorates is the Teaching, Learning, and Research research development chief directors. The big program in this chief directorate is the University Capacity Development Program, which is an umbrella program worth about 1 billion rand a year, which is directed towards supporting capacity development in universities within the areas of student development, staff development, program and curriculum development. So currently in this program we have 26 university capacity development plans in place, which are 3-year plans that are directed towards building capacity, addressing issues and experiences. A further program here is a post-school education training PCH research chair program, where the DHET has partnered with DST and the NRF to set up 6 research chairs focused on aspects of post-school education training as part of the SAFGI platform. The Entrepreneurship Development in Higher Education program is being implemented to support entrepreneurship development in the higher education space with a focus on student entrepreneurship, building entrepreneurship in the academic program in universities, so building aspects of entrepreneurship development across university curricula and developing academics in terms of the ability to take the academic entrepreneurship project forward, and then to work with universities around the notion of entrepreneurial universities, universities becoming more entrepreneurial. Teaching and Learning Development Capacity Improvement Program is a program that is being implemented to strengthen teaching across the system. So supporting the development of primary school teachers, TVET college lecturers, community education and training college lecturers, special needs education teachers, and inclusive teachers. It's a 5-year program that will be ending in 2021. The International Scholarships Program is a program that we partner with have a partnership with a whole range of countries, and we send South African students abroad for scholarship studies, international scholarship programs. We're currently positioning this more and more in the postgraduate space, honors, masters, and PhDs. The big ones at present are partnerships with China, Russia, and Hungary, and smaller ones include partnerships with Ireland, Switzerland, Sweden, and so on. I thought I'd end the work of the CE with a focus on the key program within the University Capacity Development Program, which is the Staffing South African Universities Framework, which is about building the academic pipeline and transforming the academic pipeline in our universities. So we have 4 programs in place here, sub-programs designed to intervene at key points in the academic pipeline. So the Nurture Emerging Scholars Program is being set up as an academic internship. We spoke about this issue, Honorable Washington raised the issue of how do we attract young people into academia, and this one is about that. It's about getting promising young people who show interest in becoming academics into a structured program where they're supported to complete their masters and PhDs, but where they also receive strong support towards what an academic life looks like. Teaching and learning and research capacity development, exposure to international experiences and so on. So kind of nurturing them slowly into an academic space with the hope that we attract them to stay in that space. The New Generation of Academics Program, NGAP, is about appointing new people in our universities year by year. So every year there will be 100 new posts allocated for recruitment of new young black and women academics in key priority areas. The existing academics capacity enhancement program is about building the existing academics in the institutions. We have 2 programs here. The university staff doctoral program is about supporting academics to achieve doctorates. 46% of our academics in 2017 across the university system had doctorates. The NDP target by 2030 is 75%, which is a big jump. I think a massive task, but this program is one of the contributors towards that. The Future Professors Program is a program that's just been implemented from this year. And this program is about identifying those academics who who are already showing leadership potential in terms of research and moving them into the next level of development so that they can apply for ratings and apply for professor positions. I just had a look at the applications for the first intake. So for 26 positions this year, we had over 130 applications and 90% of them black, 57% of them women. So I think this kind of program will make a significant difference in terms of changing the profile of the professoriate going forward. And then finally, a high education leadership and management program is about building leadership and management capacity at the various levels, from heads of school, heads of departments, heads of faculty, DVCs, VCs, and so on. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's get the three more and then we'll go to the
chapter. Let's go to Timothy.
Revision of our funding norms, And again, I'll talk today when I talk to the Chief Directorate of Finance, development of CED Act regulations and those of specific regulations to do with finance, provision of reliable information and statistics. In fact, we've had quite a lot of success in terms of our what we call PPMIS, which is really starting to work quite well now, and it's now about making sure that you get the data out of the system. And then improved academic performance remains an issue in our senior colleges. All right, so I will then move into the various chief directors. So I'll start with a little bit of what we've achieved in the last while, and then I'll move over to challenges and opportunities. So one of the things that has come out of the ministerial task team on maths and science is the basically weak math and science ability of TVET students, and also language ability. So what we've then done is to develop what we call a PLP, or pre-vocational learning program, with the idea that students should enter, if the math and language is not at the desired level, into a pre-vocational program in order to give them a greater chance of success throughout the course. We find that our throughput rates are still quite low in the TVET sector, and so this is an intervention to try and strengthen the foundational knowledge of the students when you then move through the learning program. So we're quite pleased to say in 2018 we piloted with a few colleges, and in this year almost 47 of our 50 colleges are participating in the pre-vocational learning program. We have in last year reviewed 30 of our NATET curricula. You will also know that this is a matter that receives quite a bit of attention, is the outdated nature of curriculum in the TVET sector, so you can see that there are already some strides being made in that regard. A number of partnerships that have been established, they varied, some of them with other government departments, and I think what is really happening, and we're quite thrilled about, is that we are also finding synergies across various government departments. So be that the police services or hospitality and tourism, but of course also partnerships with the private sector. We have developed an admission policy, which is already implemented, and a big one for us this year is we have started to standardize allowances, our NSFAS allowances. And we have also established a committee to specifically work on a policy for disability. One of the things that our sector is really not good with is dealing with students with disabilities. We see it as a priority area, and so some work in that regard has already started. We are also in the process of developing guidelines for our student representative councils, and in general the conduct across colleges, and just to try and create a larger level of stability. We have a student representative body called SAFESA. We had some problems towards the end of last year where new membership, and we are also in the process of working with those student representative councils to establish a new structure. Now, some of the challenges that we have, we believe that there is inadequate experience and expertise in our system for curriculum development. What we would like to see in the sector is that we progressively move towards a place where the national department doesn't develop all the curricula for the colleges, but the colleges can take a more autonomous role in its own curriculum development. But in order to get there, we really have to build capacity in terms of curriculum expertise across the sector. Also, the occupational program is one of the key driving areas in our colleges. Currently, there is a NCV and Report 191, or the NATED courses presented as ministerial approved programs in colleges. The occupational programs are QCCO or CETA type qualifications, and we believe that that has to really become a key portion of the TVET offering. Now, that will also rely on colleges then to do their own curriculum development, own assessment, and so on. And so there's a lot of capacity building work that has to happen around that. As I've already said, we've done quite a bit of curriculum development. We also are in the process of appointing curriculum experts or subject experts to try and assist to fast-track the matter of curriculum development and some of the new programs that will be coming up through renewable energy, ICT, and then of course all matters digital and post-industrial revolution also need to have priority in the upcoming year. Formulation of bursary rules and guidelines, this is something that is done every year annually. They are published and that supports colleges to work within a framework to manage the NSFAS bursaries. Then, you know, and this point actually comes up in quite a number of the slides, is poor capacity of our regional offices. Currently, our regional offices are quite small. This merger took place in 2015. The regional offices are quite small. We have some vacancies there, and the ability then to strengthen the region to support our colleges actually becomes one of the key important things that we need to do in the course of the year as well. See, like I'm a bit slow. Okay. Then I'm still with programs and qualifications. I did mention post-industrial revolution. This is really one of the key things that we need to be working on in the coming year. And one of the other things that we have already started with, but really is going to be some dedicated attention, is to streamline the planning processes between our sisters and our community colleges. If colleges are going to effectively deliver the CETA program, we have to align the planning cycle and as well as the funding cycle. So there are bilaterals already happening between the two branches where we are trying to create synergy in those processes. The admission policy, we are trying to, it was in fact already implemented, but of course colleges will then do, take the policy and develop their own specific procedures around admission. We, at the moment, still in the TVET sector, have a lot of students that enter in January, that just come to the college in January to enroll. Similar to universities, we want to move to a point where those enrollments are done already in October or November of the previous year to lighten the load for the start-up of the new academic year. So this is also an important group that needs to happen, and it's something that happens in conjunction with the institutional support branch. And then we do believe that we have real pockets of excellence in our colleges in as far as teaching and learning is concerned, and we're also trying to promote a system of peer learning where we take really those areas of excellence and try and create sort of focus groups where lessons learned can be taken over. Right. Then moving into examinations. First of all, I must say that TVET examinations, we know there's a big emphasis on you, for example, at DPE in exams, but the TVET system is really significantly bigger than the DPE examinations. We run per annum 7 cycles. There are trimester programs, semester programs, and then year programs, and all of those have to be managed. So, it's almost in a continuous mode of checking and assessing colleges whether there's a state of readiness to conduct their own examinations. And those colleges then are checked for all the requirements and the procedure around that. What are the things that they need to have in place? Strong rooms, security, etc., etc. Now, our exams section actually, I would say, is one of the sections where we probably could say we have some quality vacuum. At the moment, although the qualities are there, they are quite old and they are quite dated. So a significant work has gone into developing a complete set of policies for our exams, and those at the moment is in the process and will probably be published public comments, I hope, still before the end of the year. Together with formalising exam processes, all our committees have now been formalised, formally set up, irregularities committees, and so on to deal with the normal business of exams. another achievement that we can talk about. We have taken all the printing of our exams to our government printers. They really are kitted out with quite modern and up-to-date equipment that allows us greater levels of security. You know, so those exam documents are printed, packaged, and even sealed in a box without any human intervention. And so for us, that really does give us some confidence in terms of security of the exam system. You know, we're always trying to keep those exams as credible as possible and to try and keep any risk out of it, so that helps a lot. As of April, we had no exam leakages and really were complimented by the UC in terms of the credibility of the exams that we've delivered. One of the burning issues for us is the certification backlog that we are dealing with. This has a very long history and comes probably over the last 15 years. The CTES system, the State Information Technology System, is quite dated, and we are actually in the process of developing a new IT system. But as we do that, we are still trying to deal with the certification backlog. Now, in the last quarter, the first quarter of this year, around about 77,000 certificates were printed. But nevertheless, it remains something that we have a task team and are trying to deal with certification backlog. All right, then as I've said, we are in the process with some of the challenges of developing a new IT system. And one of the other issues with the exams is our compliance by our colleges. Now, you need to submit your continuous assessment marks, year marks, in order to be able to get an exam mark, and sometimes compliance with colleges is not always that great. So this is something that we continue to discipline and enforce timely submission. We find that we have quite a lot of problems with our private providers around examination and also security of examination. So what we're trying to do here is to create nodal points where exam papers are sent to public colleges, and only on the morning that the exam is written are those papers then distributed from the nodal point to campuses of public colleges, but also the private colleges. And we believe that in that way we also curb to a great degree reading on exam papers. Again, the issue comes up about regional capacity. There's a lot of monitoring. I said earlier we have 50 colleges, but we have around 300 sites or campuses. And so the monitoring across those multiple sites really is challenging and difficult for a small regional office to do. All right. I think I've spoken about the regulations for examinations that we will be publishing shortly. And then maybe just a few points on the new exam systems that we are developing. A lot of the modules have already been completed. We are in the process of user acceptance testing. It might be nice at some point to also come and demonstrate the system to the portfolio committee if there's an interest to do that. And hopefully, if all things go well, that system should be implemented for the first exam cycle of the new year, so the April exam cycle of 2020. Okay, then systems planning and institutional support. This chief director basically has three functions. It's about planning, the college planning, college monitoring, and also governance. So currently, at the end of last year, all our college councils' term came to an end. In fact, 22 came to an end, and the remaining colleges came to an end in March of this year. We have managed to appoint 10 members that need to be appointed. Five are ministerial. All the ministerial appointees have been made, and we are now in the process where colleges nominate an additional five members, and they are putting forward their nominations also for endorsement and concurrence by the minister. This unit also deals with all matters that potentially have a negative impact on teaching and learning. So, whether it's any unrest or instability, fraudulent activities or whatever it might be, this unit gets into those matters and tries to create stability in colleges. Alright, then throughout the slides you will see that there are some points made about international trips. Our TVET colleges, for any international trips or participation or exchanges that they have, need permission from the minister, and so this unit also deals with that. We have quite a number of partnerships going on. One of the very strong partnerships is with the British Council, where we have a long-standing exchange program between colleges. We are dabbling quite a lot in the dual system of education, so a lot of exchanges with the Germans, the Austrians, and the Swiss. And then of late, also quite a lot of activity with China and India around exchanges. Alright, and then the final point there is we obtained an unqualified audit opinion on our student data set. Now for us that was quite a big one. It's taken us some years to get our TVET MIS in good working order and to have an unqualified audit, meaning our data in that system is good. It was quite a big achievement for us. Okay. So at the moment, work that is continuing, I've said that on the council front, is that the colleges are submitting their council names. What we've also done this time around is we've really done very rigorous vetting of council members to serve on colleges, both in the departmental processes, but we've also enforced those processes in our colleges. So, to do credit checks, criminal checks, and all this sort of vetting to make sure that the members of our council are really officially in good standing. A challenge that we do have, I've just explained that this unit does a lot of the investigative work, forensic work when things are out of order at colleges, and really this is some expertise and capacity that we could have more of in the department. Although I must say we have also taken hands with National Treasury, and from that end we do get audited as well. I spoke a little bit earlier about the admission policy, and so what we are trying to do is to get our planning cycles a little bit more organized so that we have already pre-enrollments in August, and of course the Senate and on the planning branch is responsible for that. All right. This unit is at the moment developing a whole set of standard operating procedures. This is something that we don't have. Those procedures really govern the engagement between colleges and the department and colleges and regions. And it really covers everything from teaching and learning through data integration, data upload, and so on to really just create a nice, easy platform for people to understand how we engage and how we share information. I've spoken about the council members, also to say that we have developed a really nice reference guide for our council members in terms of what is the CDT Act, what is the statute, and just understanding of the basic functions of the college, and that reference material is available to all council members. We had a national induction session for our first 5 members. And what we will do now going forward is to have regional induction sessions as the additional 5 members of council come on board. At the moment, in terms of colleges, we have only one under administration, and that is the Central Johannesburg College. And then there's another point on international trips. Alright, in terms of financial planning, this is another chief directorate. So first of all, they look after or administer our capital infrastructure efficiency grant. This is a grant that we've got as of 2018-19 financial year to the value of $1.3 billion. Now, any investment in infrastructure in colleges simply has not happened. The last money that has gone into infrastructure was in 2007 with recapitalization. So this is the first time that we've seen seen significant money flowing into the colleges for infrastructure, maintenance and development. And we are really actually quite strict about it. What we found in the previous round is that a lot of the money went into building nice administrative offices and what they call central offices. This time we are really adamant that that money must go into teaching and learning facilities. So into classrooms, into workshops, student solution facilities, you know, the things that make a real difference for young people. Also we find with the dilapidated infrastructure is a great area of contestation and where we see a lot of projects. So we really want to make sure the money gets to where it's intended, and for that reason we are we've developed maintenance standards, and all colleges have to submit maintenance plans in accordance with those standards that have to be approved before money can then be spent. So it has taken a bit long to get those plans approved and to get all of that done, but we believe that it was well served if the money can get to where it needs to go to. Alright, so there you have over the next number of years the amount of money that will be allocated to infrastructure. At college level, we have also insisted that colleges must take on infrastructure manager to try and manage the infrastructure projects. Currently they don't have, or they didn't have, many of them do have these people on board now to manage the infrastructure. Alright. With the announcement in December 2017 of fee free education, that has really assisted our colleges greatly, and over 800 million rand over the NTF has been allocated to colleges. Now that includes the infrastructure grant for tuition and NSF, of course the infrastructure is separate to that. And you can see then the amounts as they are phased in over the NTEF. But having said that, colleges are in a position where they have over-enrolled for the program funding that they've got. So this funding does not mean that we can dramatically increase our spaces in colleges. It's about actually now funding the students that are there to the required level. And so you will see also as our strat plans and so on for the next cycle come out, the numbers look quite flat. But it is a process of catching up in terms of the numbers that are enrolled or that are over-enrolled at colleges at present. Okay, now talking about finance, our TVET colleges are not subjected to the PSMA, but what we have done as the department is we've developed financial policies, 29 of them, which we have given to colleges, and we've asked them to implement those policies as a minimum standard. And of course, those policies for us then is really aligned to the PSMA. Now, some have utilized them, others haven't, and that is in part then the reason why we want to draft regulations to enforce the adherence to those policies for the PSMA as a minimum. Okay. We've also, for many years, we've had a project running with SICA, which is the Institute for Chartered Accountants. They have helped us build some capacity in colleges in terms of financial competence, but also as a department, they've assisted us with certain processes in place. One of those things, a portal where we can monitor cash flow, for example, and in fact all financial activities colleges via a portal. We monitor on a monthly basis colleges for cash flow usage. We have a ranking to see where things are problems, where you are cash flush, and so on. So all together with that process at the moment, we really have quite a good hands-on feel for what is happening financially with our colleges. Right. Okay, I've spoken about the maintenance fund and how it has taken us some time to get the maintenance fund going. But then also speaking to our college in the university branch, you know, they confirmed for us that with all the infrastructure work that they've done, there's always quite a slow run-up phase. But then as the work starts, then, you know, we anticipate that will speed up. lot of the colleges are in procurement processes. Some have already procured, some of the money has started flowing, and we really anticipate that we are going to see some big movements now that the plans are approved and procurement processes are completed. So it's currently low expenditure rate of 2.7%, so we anticipate that will increase. In fact, I've spoken to all of those things already, that the infrastructure must go to where teaching and learning is. Infrastructure really causes a lot of student unrest. And of course, where there are major sort of disasters, roofs are blown off, or there's water or electricity issues, then that infrastructure may not have to be used to remedy those crisis situations. All right, then new campuses being built. There are nine. You can see them there in front of you. They are at various stages of development. I think we're doing an infrastructure presentation to the committee in a week's time or 2 weeks' time. We're already working on the presentation. You will see all the pictures of the various campuses and the stages of development. Then the four new ones that will be starting, as the Minister also announced, Belfort, Kiani, Kantapi, and Freyd, and then Mitchell Plain will construction also start in 2020. Okay. All right, perhaps I can just highlight that in some campuses there have been some delays. A lot of those delays have been around civil disruption, around local procurement and local labor procurement, and those mostly are some of the issues that have delayed some of the colleges. In terms of student accommodation, we are working with National Treasury on this and will start to pilot in three of our colleges, which is Northlink, Limpadala, and King Inza. Our centers of specialization. This is the final chief directorate I spoke about. Some time ago, the government had strategic integrated projects. Those projects are still undergoing. The department did an in-depth analysis of what skills would be needed to support those infrastructure projects. So we didn't want a situation where infrastructure has been built and then skills have to be imported. So there was a whole drive in terms of identifying critical skills, scarce skills, and then starting to develop those through the centers of specialization. So for this project, 13 skill areas have been identified and 26 centers, so two centers per trade. And we have partnered with industry associations such as the Welding Association, the Institute of Plumbers, CIFSA, and so on, and have launched our centers of specialization. Now, the idea is that it will work on a model of the dual system where students spend some time in a classroom and some time in the workplace, you know, throughout the 3 years of study, at the end culminating in a trade test. Currently, this doesn't happen. Currently, the TVET College is the theoretical part, and on completion of the theoretical part, that the students seek a workplace opportunity. So we believe there's a lot of academic merit in working and learning at the same time, and this is then a pilot project that we are starting. So 130 employers participating, and just about 800 apprentices have been placed to date. All right. As with anything, there are always challenges. Part of this is the alignment between the CISA grant process and the college funding processes. I have spoken about that earlier as well. It's a challenge for us. We are stumbling into some problems around bargaining council wages. In some instances, too expensive for employers to be incentivized to take on learners, and so we have to deal with those. And then learning material we are developing year by year, so for year two that learning material is not yet available, it will come online. But we believe there are a lot of opportunities here. As we are partnering with industry, we are really trying to look at the curriculum, making sure that it is relevant, up to date, that it has latest technology captured in it, and then also install work ethic and values that is designed. by industry and so that young people in that way become more marketable through these programs. And so Medicaid Health Center Specialization Project. And that brings me to the end of our presentation. I think I've gone a bit long. I apologize for that.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. It was quite an intentional decision, but it's important that we understand what's happening in this situation. All of the members during our first meeting were asking about the incident, the infrastructure, the offering, and the other class. So it's important that we become as detailed as frequent as we were. So, I'm going to ask members to know, because I would like us to take all the four if it's a call, and then we can engage with them.
So after the event, we go to skills,
and then followed by
CET.
The regulation of the condition of service and the appointment of the the Chief Executive Office of CETA, a grant regulation often known as the CETA grant regulation, which sets out how CETA will allocate and manage the skills levies that they receive through the department, alignment with the other quality councils, and in terms of what integrated learning good practice, and then as well as the trade regulations, without going into each one. But they are, in terms of the National Skills Development Plan, there is currently an implementation plan that is being developed, and based on the assessment of the ministerial tasking for CETA performance, there are a number of amendments that have been proposed to strengthen the effectiveness of these regulatory and policy frameworks for the CETA, the QCTO, and the NSF and the NSA. So as I've highlighted, there are 23 entities as well as the stakeholder constituency body. So within the branch, we have two chief directors, CETA coordination, and I will unpack that a bit further. We have the artisan development chief directorate. I think often in conversation, we hear them referred to as Imbela, where artisan trade testing happens. And then you'll note that there is a dotted line to the National Skills Authority. It's a stakeholder constituency body which is made up of business, labor, community, as well as the state. And they are, I will unpack their role in terms of advisory, in terms of skills development. And then we have the entity called the National Skills Fund. So in terms of CETA coordination, which is the first chief directorate, there are 22 entities that are reporting to the chief directorate in terms of performance information, planning, and reporting. And these are the 21 CETAs, which the Minister of Education and Training gazetted on the 22nd of July for establishment from the 1st of April 2020 to 31st of March 2013. And in terms of, and then the other entities, the Quality Council of Trade and Occupation. So the function for this particular chief director is to facilitate the development and implementation of CETA strategic plans, annual performance plan, and sector skills plan. The sector skills plan is the research component in terms of what CETA, the sectoral information that they receive from employers. So inherently, what does the labor market require? What are the skills that are in demand? They also provide support to the CETA to implement various learning programs, which are including but not limited to learnership, work integrated learning, apprenticeship, etc. And these are often, these are annually negotiated through the service level agreements that the department sets with the CETAs, and then they monitor the CETA implementation and achievement in terms of their service level agreement as well as the annual performance plan on a quarterly basis. The development and the review of the skill development legislation, regulation and policy and system and guidelines is a key component to support the 21 entities, because one of the elements is that the system, instead of developing its own documentation structures to get better effectiveness, is to have a more streamlined framework to the system to implement. They also perform the role of oversight of the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, and here they set out targets that relate to the number of occupational qualifications that are developed in line with the occupations in high demand, which is gazetted by the Minister biannually, and also to maintain and update an accurate and accessible organizing framework for occupations list. And this is inherently to support how employers are able to identify the type of jobs that are available and what type of skill gaps exist in the labor market within a particular sector. So the key challenges that have been summarized here is that the meeting of targets by some of the CETAs, and this could be related to the fact that there needs to be workplace opportunities that are made available, and in trying to implement that, they have not engaged sufficiently or have been able to absorb the number of learners in a particular target. Governance challenges in some CETAs, and this is quite a key component that the CETA coordination chief director has to manage in terms of the appointment of the accounting authorities, but also where there are matters related to operational and governance challenges, they are brought in to engage with the CETA to resolve or work on the matter. Also, to improve the CETA audit outcomes in terms of the AD audits that are conducted annually, and we have seen progressive increases in terms of improvement in some of the CETA audit outcomes, but there have also been a few that have regressed. In terms of the key priorities for the chief directors, the CETA coordination for the next 12 to 24 months is the implementation of the National Skills Development Plan with effect from the 1st of April 2020. Finalizing and aligning all the CETA strategic plan and APPs with government medium-term strategic framework priorities, and this includes supporting economic prioritization. The appointment of the CETA accounting authority chairperson for the next period of appointment, which the minister gazetted in July, as well as actually in August. August the minister gazetted that. And that process is currently unfolding. We also have the gazette, the process for the appointment of the chief executive officers for the period of appointment. And then the review of the service level agreement framework to support the implementation of the NSDP in terms of the key priorities for occupations in high demand and being responsive to government key policy priority areas which are outlined. And as I've highlighted, the service level agreement is where the targets are set for CETAs in terms of what type of interventions they would be addressing, as well as increasing the quantity in terms of outputs that are occupational qualification focused. Another key priority is amendment to all the legislative frameworks. The work around the amendment to the Skills Development Act has already commenced, and there is significant progress in that regard. We also have the CETA Constitution regulations which have been reviewed, because one of the key areas is about strengthening governance in order to support effective and efficient operations in the system. So there is a need to ensure that we amend this to have a clear director for the CETA accounting authority to focus on the oversight and governance, while the CETA chief executive officer and the management focus on the implementation of the entity strategies and annual performance plan. There's also a key proposal emanating from the NSDP, and there's been significant work that the department has done in terms of the drafting, is the introduction of an independent assessor in the CETA, where there are financial or governance challenges and the department is able to intervene, and it's built on the practices that we've identified in the university sector. And also to further strengthen the planning capacity of the system is to also ensure that a CETA panel is appointed, which is made up of external experts in terms of socioeconomic priority areas, and improving the research capacity, and also evaluating the quarterly reports and annual reports of the CETA to identify whether the impact has been achieved in terms of the target and the intention set up in the National Skills Development Strategy. So the next chief director is the artisan development chief director, and the key functions, as we understand in the NSDP and the National Development Plan, artisan development is a key target, and as such, there is a very there is a dedicated chief director that is focused on increasing and improving the output in terms of production of artisans. So they coordinate the work in terms of artisan development in the country. They also develop and implement the artisan development strategy, which they engage business as well as labor in terms of the strategy. The development of the artisan development regulations and standards and policies, which includes the funding model of how much would it cost to indenture an artisan, how much would it cost to certify them, the improvement of the trade test itself, and they've also put in place mechanisms to improve the quality of provision of the trade test itself in conjunction with and through the TBET system. So they've put in place accreditation and quality assurance systems for artisan development providers. And there's a very strong role in this particular element with business and employers at large who are involved in artisan development. And then, as the DG has indicated, we have some of our officials who are currently in Russia who are coordinating the World Skills for South Africa. We have 23 contestants from South Africa that are being representing South Africa at the World Skills, and we're hoping to have a better result this year in terms of the number of gold medals. I think the last time we came back with 2 gold medals. So we're hoping to increase, and I must say in terms of the 23 contestants, majority, 60% of them are female that came out top in terms of their artisan area. So what are some of the challenges that the chief directors identified is the national fiscal funding for artisan development has not increased annually, and there's been a need to improve the infrastructure around artisan development, but they've developed partnerships with industry in terms of equipment. The momentum around the decade of the artisan was implemented about 3 years ago, but as we catch up with the world still, the momentum is starting to build. But many youth are not as attracted to the artisan space. So the decade of the artisan was an initiative to becoming an apprentice a sexy option so that we could attract the youngsters into this area. The meeting of the artisan development target by 2030 has been identified, and inherently this is linked back to the first two in terms of the cost of training an artisan, the updating and attracting youth into the particular area. So there's been discussions in terms of the MTSF, in terms of increasing possible allocations to support artisan development. So what are some of the priorities is the alignment of the memorandum of understanding between the Department of Public Enterprise in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, which speaks about the production of 30,000 artisans, the implementation of an automated artisan trade test system, which will be used to accredit all trade test centers to facilitate access. As you're aware, possibly that many of the intervention or trade testing happens centrally at Wallifant Fontaine. So it makes it difficult for those students that want to conduct their trade test to do it readily. But they've expanded the number of accreditation centers so that it's more accessible, and now they're building on the fourth industrial revolution by digitizing it as a key priority. The first phase will be rolled out from the 1st of April 2020 and will target the legacy trade, which will result in improved credibility in terms of the trade health pass rate and improve the quality and the security of trade testing conducted nationally. And the aim is also to improve the turnaround strategy. So the rolling out of the Artisan Recognition of Prior Learning, AERPL, has also created an alternative route for artisans to enter into the system and so that they can be recognized. I think some of us will remember that we had two types of artisans previously. You have Certificate 21 and Certificate 13. So one is the one that was produced through the TVET system and the other one was based on workplace experience. So this model is building on that base where learners have experience that they can be RPL. So noting that the success rate for those coming through the type of RPL was 75.9% of the 460 that participated in the pilot. And lastly, to assist the TVET colleges through the Center of Specialization processes to increase the number of artisans that will enter into the trade testing phase and that will also become eligible for RPL, artisan RPL. The last priority for this chief directorate is also to, when they talk about workshops, the following trade test workshops will be prioritized in terms of the strategic infrastructure project. And the trades that have been prioritized is plumbing, electrical, bricklaying, boiler maker, and diesel mechanic. And LELA is accredited for the trade testing for the new occupation electrical trade. So I'm going to now move on to the other entities and bodies that reside, so there are only two chief directors as I've indicated. But there is another body, which is the National Skills Authority, so the secretariat of the NSA reports to the skills branch. However, they are responsible for managing the constituency-based body in terms of performing their functions. I must apologize that this is quite small, but to capture all of these functions, this was the most easiest way to present it. It's not an organogram, but the functions that the NSA is required to perform in terms of the Skills Development Act is in the main to provide advice to the minister in terms of the National Skills Development Policy, as well as the National Skills Development Strategy. They advise the minister in terms of the NSDS implementation guidelines, as well as the funding framework, which will include the CETAs and the NSS, the National Skills Fund funding allocation strategic framework and criteria, which is tabled to them. They also provide advice to the minister in terms of the skills development regulation, which previously excluded the QCQR regulation, which is now being incorporated. They are also responsible for reporting to the minister in terms of the national skills development implementation progress. They do this on an annual basis. And they also conduct five-year evaluation studies. So there's recently been a five-year evaluation which was conducted through the university, it was a consortium University of Rajasthan, in terms of the implementation, and it included training studies of the learners. They are responsible also for liaising with the teachers in terms of the national skills development policy and the strategy, as well as the type of research and sector priorities they've identified. They are also, they also call meetings and liaise with the QCQR in terms of occupational standards and the framework, and they provide advice to the minister on the minister in the future on the QCQR qualification development framework. And they will also provide, they also gave the lecture teacher in terms of the quality of learning in and for the workplace. The NSA Executive Officer is a member of the Judiciary Council in terms of the Act. The NSA also consults, they do provincial, national consultation in terms of changes in the landscape. As I've indicated, the Minister has recently gazetted the CETA landscape, and this was based on some of the advice and engagement from the NSA in terms of the provincial stakeholder engagement. And they made recommendations around the CETA changes and the amalgamation of CETA, as well as the dissolution and the placing of CETA under administration. They also consult in terms of the service level agreement regulation and the content in terms of the priorities and alignment to government. And they also provide consultation in terms of the CETA grants that have been allocated and the CETA powers. And they also engage in terms of the NSF administration and operations and the Provincial Skills Development Forum, which is coordinated by the National Skills Authority. And lastly, also providing consultation on any amendments or implications arising from the Skills Development Levies Act and any component of the Act. There are other functions that the NSA also performs in terms of, so in the Act it says the authority must perform the functions in accordance with the Act and in consultation with all the constituencies. They must conduct investigations in the skills system, particularly for CETA, on any matter arising out of the application of the Act, exercise any of the other powers, and perform any other duties conferred or imposed on the authority by the Act, and receive from the department information in terms of the skills development. So there's a very close relationship between the Chief Director's CETA coordination in terms of data performance and the reporting to the NSA. So the key priorities the NSA has identified is aligning the role of the NSA in terms of the proposals and interventions of the National Skills Development Plan, which in summary is saying that the NSA has to be restructured and refocused to play the role of monitoring and evaluation of the CETAs and the rest of the skills development system. And then also providing advice to the minister, especially regarding the envisaged amendments to the legislation and the implementation of the objectives of the Skills Development Act. I must indicate to you an apologize at this stage, it says that the top national skills authority, but in actual fact it is the National Skills Fund. So the National Skills Fund in terms of the Act, so this is the last entity that I will be covering in my presentation. The NSF funds the following as per the Skills Development Act. It funds skills development projects of national priority as per the National Skills Development Strategy. They also fund the skills development project for the achievement of the Skills Development Act within the discretion of the Director General, and activities to achieve national standard of good practice in skills development as determined by the Minister of Education and Training. The role of the NSF is summarized as being a catalytic fund which enables government to drive skills development strategies as well as meeting the training needs of the unemployed, non-levy paying cooperatives, NGOs, community structures, and vulnerable groups. It's a national resource which initiates as well as responds to national skills development priorities. What are some of the key challenges that have been identified is that the NSF will focus on improving its audit outcomes. The challenges in terms of strengthening, the need to strengthen the monitoring and evaluation, as well as strengthening intergovernment cooperation for projects and response to national health priorities. And inherently, the catalytic fund, where there is investment from the NSF and funding allocated, is often done in conjunction with other government departments, and hence the stressing of this particular point about intergovernment cooperation. So the key priority for the NSF is the implementation and alignment of the National Skills Fund strategic plan, with effect from 1st of April 2020. And there is a particular focus in the NSDP around the community education and training sector. And there have already been engagements in the sector around this particular engagement. Finalizing and aligning the national skills development, the NSF strategic plan into government MTSF priorities, and the implementation of the business excellence model, which is basically the transformational and strengthening component of the operations for the NSF. And that brings me to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. I think one that I of September, we are scheduled to receive the presentation on the new Switzerland state. There are one of the activities that I'm doing in the CITAS. So that's very much engaged. It was just very much accounts that was still going to be in the new Switzerland state. I think that we need to break for 5 minutes. So that we are able to digest the information that we have. So when we come back, we are going to deal with the community education and training. And I think maybe we will just take 5 minutes. Only these two, so we will allocate about both of them 30 minutes, and then from there we can have a discussion. Yeah, we break for
10 minutes.
So we should be back here by...
Okay, I'm in that one.
Should be